Good day. Welcome to the Corey Morgan Show. Lots to cover today, guys. Spring's on its way. It's nice out and the politics are getting stupid, which is, well, good for me, not good for the country, but always gives me lots to rant, rave, and go on about lots of stories to cover. And yes, thank you from Freedom Honey, and good to see you there in the comments from Paradoxy. Yeah, 500th show. I didn't realize we'd gotten that many behind us, but yeah, for quite a while, I was doing them 5 days a week. They were two-hour shows, only once a week now, but still, yeah, we've put a lot behind us, guys. Thank you guys for viewing for so long and putting up with me so we can create that many shows. Let's see if we can make it to 1,000. And again, there's always lots of stories and people to talk to and things to help inspire us to create that many shows. So yeah, as we're seeing some of you guys there, Karina Mack and others, use that comment scroll. I appreciate it. Lets me know there's people on the other side of that camera there. I'm not just talking to the air like I tend to do at home or while I'm driving. Comment to me, send questions to me, my guests, just keep things civil. That's all I'm asking. Don't have to always agree. Just don't have to be screaming at each other. All right. But still, we can get some ranting and raving going out on this show. By the way, yes, today I'm going to have Landon Johnston. We're trying again. He's the fellow who got that whole Recall Gondek movement going. It still seems to be rolling along and picking up steam. It's really quite interesting how it's been developing. He assures me he's going to make it in this time. And then after that, we're going to have a quick chat, too, with John Carpe of the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. We're going to talk about Bill C-63, the Online Harms Act. You know, they're saving us all from ourselves by infringing on our free speech. There's a lot of legal questions about that bill that are just starting to build up now. So I'm sure John will be able to answer a lot of those questions for us and probably leave us with a lot more questions to ask about it. So onto the topic of the show to kick it off and what's got me wound up today. And yeah, it's just the addiction enablement cult. It just keeps going and going. And Canada's addiction enablement cult is out of control. And the havoc's spreading. And yes, they're a cult. And that's what I'm going to call them. I mean, how else can we characterize them? No matter how stark the evidence of the failure of their policy gets, they just refuse to face reality. Rather than rethinking the notion that enabling addiction will save addicts, they just keep doubling down as the policies fail and lives are lost. Their ideology, it's become a religion, and they're incapable of reason. Policymakers in the courts have embraced the tenets of the cult, and BC is ground zero. I mean, the courts in BC have declared it a charter right for addicts to consume meth and fentanyl in children's playgrounds. I wish I was making this up, but you'll still be ticketed if you smoke a cigarette within 10 minutes of a doorway. Yes, it's that insane. Then, of course, there's the notion of safe consumption. It's been pushed for years. Drug consumption centers have sprung up in urban centers across the country, and they've invariably been a disaster. The one in Lethbridge, Alberta, got shut down for corruption issues. People are begging for the one in Red Deer to be shut down because it's turned the area into a disaster zone. The centers destroy neighborhoods as the drug dealers follow the addicts and bring their associated crime with them. The safe consumption concept fails as well, as the fatal overdoses are continuing to break record levels every year. It's an easy statistic to monitor, unfortunately, and it's pretty undeniable. Addiction is spreading and is killing more people despite the advent of safe consumption centers. The cult's also, it's like it's focused on the myth that drug addiction itself is not a condition that must be cured. They see it as something that could be managed, you know, if we just managed it safely. If only addicts could get a pure enough supply of drugs and a nice place to consume them, they'll be living okay. They refuse to admit that the drugs themselves are the problem and propagate the myth that it's only impure street drugs that kill addicts. That leads to their absurd and fatal provision of a safe supply of drugs. There's no such thing as a safe supply of fentanyl or meth. Do they think if a shot of heroin was pure enough, it wouldn't kill the user eventually? Yes, that's actually what they believe. Still, the cultists have gotten their way, and BC's been handing out drugs to addicts like candies. And not only have fatal overdoses risen over there since then, but so has the number of new addicts. The addicts accept the drugs handed out, then trade them with street dealers for stronger drugs. Those dealers then use that nice safe supply to sell and create new addicts, nice fresh ones to keep their business expanding as the other ones die off. Anybody with a grain of common sense could have seen that coming. Anybody but a cultist, that is. RCMP in Prince George, BC recently seized over 10,000 pills. It sounds like most of them were from safe supply prescriptions. Now, BC Premier EB was quick to claim that the RCMP were mistaken in identifying the source of the drugs as being from safe supply sources. EB doesn't need evidence to make such a claim, of course. Cultists don't need evidence. Police officers do, however, and their evidence points to the safe supply handouts. The enablement cult has also claimed it's the lack of safe shelters for drug consumption that leads to these deaths. Homeless shelters, you see, they won't allow the consumption of drugs within their facilities, and for good reason. They can hardly help people get back on their feet if they're surrounded by others with rampant drug use around him, trying to convince the single mothers caught in a shelter to stay there with her kids while she's surrounded by addicts in the grips of meth-induced psychosis. Most of the homeless we see on the streets are addicts. The enablement cultists continually deny that, but one only needs to walk among them for a few minutes and see the pipes and syringes and know that reality. The enablement cult has managed to get funding for and open shelters now in BC where drug consumption is allowed. Yeah, they've done it. They've created the nirvana for addicts that they claim is required. The addicts are given safe supplies, and they have a safe place to consume them, but they can crash there now as well as if it was any other shelter. Now, those shelters quickly turned into dystopian nightmares, and they look like opium dens of old. There's an activist, Ken Dahlgren. I strongly suggest you try and look it up. He got footage from within the PHS Community Services Society Addiction Enablement Shelter in Vancouver, and he posted it on X. Addicts are passed out in different states of inebriation on filthy mattresses on the floor. There's body fluid sprayed on the walls, and shouts and screaming can be heard behind strangely locked doors. It looks like something out of a horror movie. How can anybody tour such a facility and still claim it's helping anybody? I mean, nobody can unless they've embraced the enablement as a religion. They're blind to reality, and the state's funding their delusion. There's not going to be an easy solution to be found for the addiction epidemic. Treatment's limited and expensive, and not all addicts are willing to take part in it. We do know what won't work, though, and that's enablement. The enablement cult is populated by academics, activists, politicians. One thing lacking within that cult, though, are the voices of recovered addicts. They know what won't work, and they support treatment rather than enablement. This cult must be defunded, guys, and we got to shut it down. Until it is, this addiction epidemic's only going to continue to spread and get worse. All right, that's what's got me going again. I tell you, watch that video, guys. It's chilling. It's just bizarre. This is a funded center with these guys laying around in that state. It's something else. All right, let's check in on other news and see what our news editor, Dave Naylor, is up to. Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going well, Corey. Got to ask, though, don't you think it's time for a haircut?
I was talking to Nico about that earlier. Yes, but I'm putting it off. I can't stand getting my haircut. It's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, well, hey, did I read somewhere that you got bit this week by one of your pet bees?
Yeah, the ingrate stung me on the inside of my wrist. It's still itchy. Annoying. I was just feeding them for the spring feeding, and they were upset with me opening up their nice comfy hive and gave me a zap for my troubles.
You're not supposed to be wearing some sort of suit or gloves?
Actually, I did. The thing managed to get me through the glove. It was too thin. I like learning things the hard way. But I let it go, gave them their food, and moved aside. But this is not a good way to kick off our spring relationship.
No kidding. So tell me, Corey, when you were driving in today and coming into work, did you feel a disturbance in the force? Did you feel something strange was going on around you? Because
no more than usual.
Prime Minister's in town.
Oh, yes.
Right? So, there was a big disturbance of the force this morning where he met in Eau Claire with Premier Danielle Smith and later met with the media up at SAIT, where he says no, despite Premier Smith's constant demand that he fire Stephen Guilbeault, he's not going to. He loves his environment minister, and people who can't get along with him, you know, should change the way they work. We've got a story on a Rive scam. I know the Liberals don't like it to be called a Rive scam, but we've got some public works officials who say all those $60 million in cost overruns were fair and reasonable. I guess their definition of fair and reasonable is different than mine, Corey. We've got a story on Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland. Out in Victoria, she said everybody on the prairies dreams of moving to BC. It's their slice of heaven. Strange thing to say, she was an Alberta girl herself, and Medicine Hat's own Tamara Leach fired back and said her idea was heaven is when they're all on the unemployment line. We got a story on a senator's junket to Rome, $45,000. Believe it or not, they were going to study soil and spent 7 days in Rome, and that's a nice work if you can get it. We've got a new columnist by the name of Hall. He jumps in today in the Nenshi fight, his leadership campaign now, I guess, to run for the Alberta NDP. Our Linda Slobodian has a piece on Jordan Peterson testifying in front of Congress yesterday in the States, talking about Big Brother watching and how surveillance superstate is coming to the West. And our opinion editor, Nigel Hannaford, has reached all the way to beautiful downtown Cape. What the heck is that place called? Cape Town in South Africa. I've been there, I should remember. And we've got a new columnist starting out of there called Kate Steinke. And she talks about the mirror stuff going on in South Africa that Canadians need to be aware of. So lots of stuff happening, Corey, as we speak. Premier Smith is having a media availability in Edmonton over her meeting with Trudeau, and our Ledge reporter Jonathan Bradley is there, and we'll be filing as soon as it's over.
Oh, great. Yeah, I won't be able to catch Premier Smith's live thing, but I still haven't forgiven you for playing Justin Trudeau's live conference in the newsroom for, what was that, 2-3 hours it felt like in the background going on over there? That was just torturous, Dave.
It was. It was a word salad that kind of made me feel a bit nauseous.
Yeah, well, I guess news is news, whether we like listening to it or not. All right. Well, thanks for the update, Steve.
Yeah, we'll see you on the pipeline, Corey.
You betcha. I'll talk to you later. That is Dave Naylor, our news editor. And as you can see, yes, new columnists plus existing reporters covering stuff all across the country. Guys, the reason we can do that, this is when I nag you and remind you, is through subscribers. We're an independent news outlet. It means we're not taking any of those tax dollars. We aren't beholden to Trudeau. We're beholden to you, the viewers, the listeners. And yeah, a subscription's $9.99 a month, $100 for a year. Well worth it, like a newspaper subscription. If you haven't subscribed yet, go to westernstandard.news/subscription. Nag other people to subscribe too. And if you've already subscribed, thank you very much. We really, really do appreciate it. All right, so let's see what else is going on in this mad, mad world. And it is. This one I've been seeing making the rounds. So the Supreme Court of Canada ruled in a recent sexual assault case that it was problematic for a lower court judge to refer to the alleged victim as a woman. Yes, the court referred to the rape victim as a woman, and implying that the more appropriate term should have been person with a vagina. This is the Supreme Court of Canada, guys. This is what it's come down to. Justice Sheila Martin wrote that the trial judge's use of the word woman may have been an unfortunate and engendered confusion. This is insane. The lunatics, the woke, and now they've hit the Supreme Court of Canada, the top court of the nation. Women, speak up. They are literally stealing your gender. They're at the point now, this wasn't even a case where there was anything to do with transgender. This was a woman who was raped. This is what the case was about. But somehow the use of the word woman rather than person with a vagina has made it offensive. It's made it wrong. You aren't allowed to be called a woman anymore. You know, we can only speak up so much, I guess, as men, but women, this trans cult, you know, if I can get back onto the cultishness of things, the extremists, they've taken over. The lunatics are running the asylum. And it's stealing from you what you are. You guys have got to speak up now. You've got to say enough is enough. Some are starting to speak up. I watched J.K. Rowling. You know, she's certainly no hard right winger, but boy, she's been getting it because she's dared to speak up against the crazed trans stuff. But she's still speaking up. But I mean, it's easy to speak up when you got a billion in the bank. For your common person, it's not so easy. But this is getting just ludicrous. Person with a vagina. You're not a woman anymore. Nope, you're a person with a vagina. Madness. And we've got to inject that into everything we do. We can't even talk about a woman in a court anymore. It's just, sanity has departed from us, guys. So yeah, speaking of sanity, Chrystia Freeland, as Dave mentioned there at the end of things, where was that quote? I gotta look down here and find this. But she said along the lines of, yeah, you know, every person on the prairie's dream and little piece of heaven would be to move to BC. You know, I kind of see what she might be trying to get at, saying it's a, you know, it's nice out there. People retire over there, but talk about divisive. You know, when you're in a federal position, when you say things like that, because yes, the unspoken part is saying life sucks on the prairies. If you work hard enough, you might raise enough money for yourself to retire in BC. Look, I got nothing against BC. It's nice on the island if you like rainy winters rather than sunny, cool ones. You know, there's ups, downs, advantages, disadvantages of every region in the country. You know, one of the things I learned as a surveyor, I traveled all over North America. I worked literally from up by Tuktoyaktuk on the Beaufort Sea in the Mackenzie Delta area, all the way down to near the Texas-Mexico border and everything in between. And something I found really interesting was no matter where I went, there was cool stuff to be seen and enjoyed and to be had. The populations had unique qualities that you could interact with, get to know people. People had pride in their areas and very good reasons to be proud of their areas, whether it was the middle of the desert, whether it was even West Virginia with some of the people have earned their reputation over there. And yes, the prairies. You know, there's lots to be seen and done in the prairies. The prairies are beautiful. You want to see sunsets, hit the prairies, guys, and sunrises. You know, culture, things to be done. If you just drive a little bit off the road, the prairies are loaded with it. It's not some hellscape. And to have the Deputy Prime Minister imply, perhaps, that the prairies are just a place you have to be, and as soon as you can escape to BC, you should do so, is just divisive and stupid. But I guess it's kind of par for the course for Freeland. She really is a weird little woman, isn't she? And yeah, so we did have, you know, I'll get on to that, her boss, Justin Trudeau, speaking of weird, and he is weird. He did his news conference. He came to Alberta. They do these things with short notice to reduce the amount of protests that are inevitably going to happen. And he popped up. He sat down with Danielle Smith. We'll hear more about that. I'm interested to hear what Premier Smith's going to say about it. I guess the point of this was to come to Calgary and announce a dental program for senior citizens, an expansion of dental coverage for senior citizens. It's just like this government is floundering. You know, I mean, they're throwing out programs and money and ideas and doing their announcements in almost a campaign sort of way. We'll just pick a random part of the country and plop down and announce another spending program. So this dental plan, I don't know, might be good, might not be. I'll have to look into the details of it. But I mean, if it's anything like the healthcare plan, well, it'll be great, except you're going to be waiting a long, long time to get your teeth looked at. You know, when you something I said a while ago, you know, P.J. O'Rourke, one of my favorite writers, said, if you think healthcare is expensive now, just wait until the government makes it free. And it's true. You're just waiting to see how much it costs when it's free. Something along those lines. I mean, yeah, it's free, but you're going to die waiting for it. Your teeth will fall out waiting for it. You might as well start carving your wooden teeth now. But that's what he was here to announce. But most of the questions at the press conference were, of course, about the carbon tax, because we've got multiple premiers from the Maritimes, Premier Smith, as we expected. And she said going into it, she was going to ask Trudeau about that with the carbon tax. And all he would do is just go on with long, rambling, pointless word salads about, you know, taxing pollution and crap like that. It was just agonizing. As I said, Dave was torturing me. Hey, that's the job. We'll listen to the news as it's coming out. Justin might have said something newsworthy throughout that conference, so we had to listen to it and report on it if anything of note were to surface, but nothing did. And this guy is just odd, you know, and they won't change their tack. Like, we're seeing poll after poll after poll. I've never seen so many federal polls, especially when we're this far from what's expected to be the actual election period. But it's just because it's a morbid curiosity on the part of the pollsters now, when it's amazing how low the support for the Trudeau government's getting. Like, people are just wondering, how bad can this get? And it gets worse and worse and worse. And they won't change their tactics. That's what's kind of fascinating in this dark and morbid sort of way. Like, how bad is it going to have to get before you realize that nobody gives a hoot about your tax on pollution when they can't pay the rent, when they can't pay for the heat for their house because you've shut down too much of the energy sector? He's just lost, but we're stuck with him. What a weird holding pattern we're in, and a destructive one and a painful one. Because, yeah, unfortunately, Jagmeet's holding him up in there, and even if only 20% of the country still wants him as the prime minister or whatever it might be getting down to, we can't get rid of that clown until an election's called. And he's showing no signs of wanting to back out. He really does believe he can turn this government around. Maybe he can. I don't see how he's going to manage to do it, but he's going to try. Well, so far it looks like Landon's not going to make it again. So, okay, fool me once, fine, fool me twice. Landon, I appreciate your efforts, but you are not doing yourself any favors pissing me off. You don't have a lot of favorable press in the city as it is. And when you've stood me up twice now for a live interview, well, I'm not going to dedicate any more time to your efforts. I still wish the best for them and the recall Gondek thing and all that, but you got to do better, guys. You got to do better. All right. Something else, getting on to the news in general. Let's see. The Department of Public Works, Dave mentioned that in a briefing note, claimed that Arrive Can charges were fair and reasonable. Talk about double speak with government. You know, talk about when we're getting scammed, we're getting ripped off. The Arrive scam thing is brutal. The government's shutting down or trying to shut down investigation into this. And the bureaucrats, you know, that's where the real rot is. It's not the ones just in the front. It's the bureaucrats underneath. And they, how can they, with a straight face, how can they sleep at night to point at that and say it was fair and reasonable? You know, and Anita Anand, the public works minister, told reporters, you know, of course, she wasn't to blame. Everybody says it's somebody else's fault. That's nothing new. Guys, this thing cost $60 million that we know of for a crappy app that was that's 10 times over budget. How do they say that was fair and reasonable? How bad does it have to get while being unreasonable? You know, like where's the line? Where's the line? And I don't know how or if and when it's ever going to get settled, because these investigations just keep getting quashed. The NDP keeps squishing them down. All they're about is just hanging in there with their agreement with Trudeau, and he can get away with anything. I'm really getting frightened. People are going to get desperate. If the democratic means of trying to change things seems to fail people, people start doing desperate things, and I don't want to see that. Well, let's get a little closer to Alberta. Of course, Nahed Ninchy, you know, a fellow I'm always happy to go on about, officially entered the NDP race for the leadership in Alberta. And, you know, this is going to be an interesting race to watch. Ninchy versus old Gil McGowan. And as it's kind of said in a past rant, you know, they're shoving the four women aside. The two men are going to come in there and fix this party up now. But the NDP loyal aren't necessarily so thrilled. I mean, Ninchy's never exactly been a friend to the NDP. He's a leftist. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But he wasn't an NDP leftist. He was just kind of his own thing all that time. But now he's coming in as arrogant and as pompous as ever and saying, well, I'm going to come in and save you guys from yourselves and take over this party and save Alberta. And holy crap. You know, it's not just the left. Lots of people claiming, oh, we're so tired of the vitriolic politics and the negative politics and the attack politics. Well, in the last 2 days with what Ninchy's been spouting out, he has called Premier Smith everything from immoral to a liar to you name it. Like, he's just lit the ground on fire. And this is like day three or two of his official campaign for the leadership of the NDP. Can you imagine if that clown wins the leadership, what the next few years with him as the leader of the opposition will be like? It's going to be an interesting race. But you see, the NDP really have to think about things. Is Ninchy? Ninchy's a chameleon. He'll do and say whatever the hell he thinks he has to win. That's it. That's it. He doesn't really have that much for principle in him. Gil McGowan, on the other hand, well, he's a pure labor sort, angry union leader. But at least, you know, one thing I can give a little bit to Gil I can respect, he's true to his ideology. You know what Gil's about. And Gil will keep the NDP as a principled socialist party, if you could create such a thing. The NDP will remain the NDP. If Ninchy gets in, well, the NDP is going to be whatever Ninchy tries to make it into. And that's going to be something interesting as well, because Ninchy is not a team player. He does not play well with others. He doesn't tend to work well in a group. We saw that when he had to actually bring a psychologist into City Hall because the rest of the councilors wouldn't cooperate with him. That was kind of the arrogance of Ninchy. That was pure Ninchy. You know, when basically city councilors were fighting and standing up to him as he was supposed to be leading and guiding them. So clearly they must be crazy, because how could they not follow his divine guidance? I mean, they don't know what they're talking about. So let's bring in a psychologist. Look it up. You know, this is Ninchy's, his history is something else. But people's memories are short. And that's why I like to keep reminding people of just how rotten Ninchy is. Because if people forget for too long, he can't be underestimated. He is a skilled communicator. He does have some talented people on the team helping to try and get him in there. And, you know, nothing's impossible. I mean, you know, a number of years ago, I would have said it's impossible that Alberta would ever have an NDP government with Rachel Notley as a premier. And boy, I certainly would have been wrong. So I'm not going to sit here today and say it's impossible for Nahed Ninchy to become the premier in a future government. It's not impossible. But if we watch, if enough people realize who and what he is, no, it should be pretty unlikely. But yeah, we do have to take it seriously. We got to wonder. But this race is going to be, well, there's going to be a lot of political drama that's fun to watch. But it's also very important for Albertans, because it really is going to be an identity crisis for NDP supporters. Because as I said with Gil McGowan is true to the NDP base and he's a union man, but he will not win the premiership. And I mean, again, I won't say 100% because as I said before, nothing's impossible. But very, very, very unlikely. If the NDP want to win the premiership again, they want to get into power again, Nenshi's probably their better path, but they got to sell a lot of their soul to do so. So they got to make their mind up. Are they going to be true to who they are with their roots, or are they going to jump on with good old Nahed and see if they get a better chance of getting themselves to the premier's chair for that? So we'll be watching, of course, and covering that all the way through. And, you know, the main thing is, and I've always been hard on Nenshi for years. The main thing that's always driven me nuts with him, again, as I said, he's a political chameleon. When he first won as mayor, he campaigned as a conservative. I mean, those of us who were already familiar with his history at Mount Royal and his time beforehand knew that he was certainly no conservative by any measure, but enough Calgarians fell for it and they put him in there. And he was so bad, businesses actually had to rally outside of City Hall. Business owners, they're not typically the people who protest at City Hall and things like that. But they had to get out and basically beg for the tax increases to stop because he was spending so badly and punishing and crushing businesses so badly that they had to just beg him to stop. He's not a conservative. He's not right wing. No, people know better by now. But I just don't like it when people are disingenuous coming in. As I said with Gil McGowan, at least I can respect him for being open about what he is. Nenshi's just whatever he feels he has to be. And I have a hard time respecting that. All right, let's talk about, we're going to get on, John Carpea hopefully will show up pretty soon, and we're going to talk about C-63, but let's talk about some of the free speech and things we've got going on. This was an interesting one, a BC talk radio station. You know, and talk radio has just gotten so weak and milquetoast and boring for the most part. Most of the hosts are just, they're afraid of being edgy any longer. You know, we used to have people like Weisbeck and Peter Warren, and unfortunately Gormley is retired, Rutherford's gone, Smith is now premier. Get this fella in BC, and I don't even know if this host is typically an edgy one or anything else, but he dared to call out a Muslim guest. That's what the bottom line was. So this gentleman's name is Munir, and I guess they were talking about, you know, Hamas, a very divisive issue, a controversial one. And here's some of the quotes from him. You know, he said, "Is Hamas not a barrier to peace?" And the guest said, "I'm going to correct you and say the United Nations does not recognize Hamas as a terrorist organization." He says only a few nations do. He's denying that Hamas are terrorists. And the host said, when Hamas fighters are taking glee and cutting heads off, and he interrupts, said, "Do you have evidence of that?" And he said, "Yes, video. They posted the video. And yes, unfortunately, we saw it." And he said, "No, they didn't." And then the host said, "You know what? We're done here. We're done here. I'm not going to sit here and listen to somebody make excuses for a group of people that did that." So he cut the guest off and got rid of him. Okay, fine. So they had a fight on the air. The host said, "To hell with you," and kicked him off the show because the guest was basically spreading BS. So 157 complaints came in to the national ombudsman of this Kamloops BC talk radio show. I mean, come on, there couldn't have been more than a couple thousand listeners. I mean, not to knock the guy's show, but it shows the cancel culture, the lunatics, the people who want to shut down discourse, how quick they are to get on there and try and block the voices they don't want to hear from. So 157, the ombudsman at the end of it basically dismissed the complaints and said, piss off. They accused this man, though, of Islamophobia, all because he just countered the narrative being spread by his guest on the show. It's ridiculous. But this is where we get into trouble with a lot of the things, with Bill C-63, which empowers the human rights commissions. We see we're not talking about courts anymore. We're not talking about law. We're talking about the Canadian Human Rights Commissions. These are kangaroo courts, and these are things that don't operate on reality. They do operate based on complainants, and they won't necessarily identify the complainant. They won't tell you if there was one or 1,000, if you were somebody who was brought before one of their tribunals for something they say crossed a line somewhere. And it's very disturbing. You don't have the regular elements of defending yourself with a situation like that. So this guy out here, Brett Munir of CHNL AM radio in Kamloops, he got cleared on it. But boy, what a madness if, you know, you just say these things and suddenly you get 157 complaints. Now, what happens if C-63 comes in? Is C-63, see, when I first started reading that bill, And when it came out a couple weeks ago, and it's hundreds of pages long, and it's an omnibus bill. And that means they've packed a whole bunch of stuff into one bill. And I despise that, because this is what the government does. This is a tactic. They'll stick something in the bill that almost everybody supports. So that way, anybody who questions the bill itself will be accused of opposing that. So the bill starts out with talking about cracking down on, you know, the posting of child porn. Of course, everybody says, yes, okay, fine. We got no sympathy for pedophiles. We, you know, having more cracking down on providers who are hosting that sort of crap and things like that. So yeah, you know, as I read through, yeah, okay, I can get down with this stuff. But then you get further into this bill, and then suddenly it goes into hate speech and sentencing. Like, one of the frightening things, it talks about if a person is promoting genocide. Yeah, pretty awful thing to promote, but we'll talk about that a little more in a second here. They could be subjected, though, to a life sentence. We can't even keep murderers in jail for life sentences these days. But apparently, a life sentence can be garnered under this bill if you support genocide. Now, genocide used to be something of a cut and dry term. But unfortunately, these days, it's been turned into, it's one of the most abused words we've seen in the English language lately. Everything's genocide now. I mean, you know, the residential schools in Canada have been considered genocide by some. The, you know, there's debatable things. For example, I mean, we're certainly hearing a lot of it with the conflict in Israel right now, and that they're saying Israel's committing genocide against Palestinians. I'm not going to start down the road of that debate right now, but it's debatable. It certainly is. There's definitely room for people to say that Israel isn't. But if at some point the government or one of these commissions or one of these tribunals determines that it is genocide and somebody dared to say that it isn't, they could be subjected to a life sentence, couldn't they? Technically, by that bill, that's how insane this bill is. And likewise, we've had others talking about criminalizing, referencing anything, you know, they talked about criminalizing residential school denialism. It's not that people deny, they love using that language because, of course, they're trying to tie it in with Holocaust denial. But there's nobody denying that the residential schools existed. But now they want to deny, you know, if anybody should question this narrative. We've got Kamloops to this day that the country was turned upside down over almost 3 years ago now over these anomalies found with ground penetrating radar. And not a single body has been found. I mean, we had the Pope over here giving a groveling apology. The government was over there handing out money like candy as usual. A whole new holiday was made because of the alleged burials of 200 children at the Kamloops residential school site. But they still haven't found one yet. And we're going to get to a point where, because that's getting called genocide as well, that if you questioned that, you could get a life sentence. Now, we have laws about inciting people to a crime. I mean, if you're going to stand on a street corner with a bullhorn and say, I want everybody to get together and round up and kill this group. I want you to slaughter these people over here. I want you to wipe those individuals out over there. Yeah, that's certainly trying to promote genocide. But guess what? That's also criminal incitement. We have laws to deal with that. And you can and will be charged with it. So why do we need this with C-63? The other thing that's kind of weird in it, and others have been talking about that, is that there's provisions in that bill to put people under house arrest for suspicion that they might commit a hate crime. Yes, true thought crimes. We're getting into the realm of 1984. They're talking about sanctions against citizens, locking them in their homes, punishments for crimes they haven't committed yet, but crimes the government fears they might commit. Do we have any idea how insane this is? How far it's gone? Margaret Atwood called it out. Margaret Atwood, she's as far left and loony as they get. But she at least could see, like, whoa, guys, this is too far. This is a problem. I mean, these are the things that our idiot prime minister should be talking about. Try to justify this insane bill you've put before the House of Commons instead of saying, we're going to spend another few billion on old people's teeth. We got bigger things to talk about, Prime Minister. That's why his approval is going into the toilet. But this government is obsessed with control. And they're authoritarian. And this is what gets disturbing. This is what gives me chills. C-11, C-18, all of these bills are about trying to control what people are allowed to say, what they're allowed to talk about, what they're allowed to report on. And they're offering criminal sanctions in C-63 heavier than those we offer for second-degree murder. Wake up, people. We've got some serious, serious issues going on here. Meanwhile, what's left of the media, the legacy media, yeah, they're subsidized. They're beholden to the federal government. Those who they can't fear, you know, bully into submission, and those that, or, you know, that they can't threaten, they're trying to bribe. So, I mean, they extended the handouts they're going to give to other outlets and so on. They're spending more on it with subsidies. What do you think happens? What do you think happens when that gets put in there? Well, an outlet's not going to shake the tree, is it? And the government bloody well knows it. But then you look at some of the outcomes. So, I mean, CBC just had an increase in their budget when word just came down recently, even though they've laid off hundreds and hundreds of people, that they took that money and gave bonuses to their executives. Yes, the state broadcaster, that, and I'll call it the state broadcaster. It I know it drives them nuts whenever I do that, but it's true. Do you ever really see them that critical of the liberals? Come on. They are a tool of the Liberal Party. I do look forward again to Polyev getting in and defunding that wretched machine, that institution, that rotten old thing. It hasn't been useful since they put out the Beachcombers and the Littlest Hobo. Paradoxy is asking, why did Michael Geist not come down on this one so much? I think Michael Geist has been very critical of this, I believe. I'm not sure. He's certainly been very... Michael Geist, by the way, for those not familiar with him, he's a professor out in Ontario somewhere. I think I've had him as a guest before. He's been very outspoken. He's got a fantastic blog. If you want to look at internet free speech and free press and things such as that, Geist has really done a lot of work on that. And C-63, I'm not sure if he's hit that as hard as some of the others, but I'm pretty sure he's been critical of it. I think part of it might be he's overwhelmed. We've just got, I mean, listen to that. That's three different bills that are beating on our free speech all at once. How much can you keep up with? How much can you cover? But look him up, because he makes the case fantastically. And again, the great thing with Michael Geist, he's not a libertarian conservative type like myself. He's more of a classical liberal, I guess. I'll give it that. But he's a left of center sort of individual. He's worried about authoritarianism. I like seeing some of the others breaking ranks. That's what I like seeing out of people like Margaret Atwood and Michael Geist, or even Warren Kinsella on some of these things, is at least they hit a point where they realize that it's not leftism, it's not rightism that is our problem, it's authoritarianism. It's government wanting to control the people too much and how dangerous it is. You see, I don't think maybe Margaret Atwood fears the power that Trudeau might wield with something like C-63, but maybe she's smart enough to realize when you're giving a government a power, any kind of more increased power or reach over people, you should always envision, would you be comfortable with the government having that power if it was led by somebody you despise? You see, liberals will give them all this power to crush people's speech and ability to demonstrate and things like that, because that's no problem. Okay, fine. But do you understand that Trudeau will not be in forever? It's going to feel like forever. It already feels like forever. But he's not going to be there forever. And as you keep putting in these, you know, controls, giving more power and authority to this government, as you keep stripping away individual rights, you better hope the next government isn't vindictive and doesn't use those to crush your end of the political spectrum. That's where less government is better government. Marie Perrin saying, I believe Pierre will cancel this bill, says he'll repeal C-11. I think he will too. I think he will too. But I tell you what, governments lose a lot of appetite for repealing bills once they get in. You know, I'm not saying Polyev and his government's going to do that. I'm just saying it's better to shut these bills off before they get entrenched, because the government can sometimes kick the can down the road once they get into power, right? Now, suddenly, it might turn into a useful tool for themselves, and that can get turned around. That's why I do not want that government to have the ability to tell us what we could say, where we could say, how we could say, no matter who is in power, because they might not be inclined to get rid of it. Similar to Trudeau and his lie saying he was going to reform the electoral system. We see that over and over in countries all over the place. We're going to change the electoral system. We're going to bring in proportional representation and this and that. Look, if a government gets into power with a majority based on the current system, they're not going to change the system that got them into where they were in the first place. They've lost all incentive to do so. And Trudeau proved that quite well when he just basically broke and ignored his own promise, which I'm glad of. I can imagine the deals that would be cut. It's bad enough with him and Jagmeet Singh as it is right now. But if they had to have a pizza parliament with 12 parties in there and a proportional representation, it would be a catastrophe. If we want to talk about whole systems that we could reform, I mean, that's a whole separate discussion. You know, if you really have, what I would like to see maybe proportional representation for a Senate and a rep by pop in the parliament and an elected Senate, of course, but these are all dreams that would take constitutional reform. And that's not going to be happening during our lifetime. It's the only way we're going to see constitutional reform is if and when a country or a province is on the brink of or finally separates. And, you know, I've written the book on how we should pursue that, literally. But that is still going to be a while away yet. Marie's saying 7 premiers are against the carbon tax now and voicing their opinion. Yeah, yes, they are. And that was asked of Trudeau, as I said, during the press conference he had today. And he just talked around it and talked around it and talked around it. I think this government's getting to the point where they just don't care. They do know they're in the toilet. They do know they aren't going to turn it around. They don't have a hope. And they're just going to keep pushing ahead and putting this stuff in there until they get wiped out. I can't think of any other explanation. I mean, when you've got regional leaders all coming out united against you like this on something like this carbon tax, but he will not back down. What a stubborn, ideologically loony man. Another one, I'll close off the show with that. Half of Canadians, this is an interesting one, say that there are too many immigrants, according to a new leisure survey commissioned by the Canadian Association, the Association for Canadian Studies. All right, so I guess it was rated 50% saying there's too many coming in. See, again, it's not people saying we should have no immigrants. There's some people who say that, but I think majority of people understand immigrants are good for Canada. Most of us are either immigrants or we're only one or two generations away from immigrants, but we're just, the floodgates are open. We've got to have controlled immigration. And that's what this was saying. It was that half of Canadians are saying there's too many immigrants. You got to remember, if half of Canadians are saying that, a lot of the people saying that are people who immigrated here. We got to think for the sake of the immigrants as well as us here. How's it going to be when you get here? Great. Here's the new life I'm going to make in Canada. Oh, by the way, yeah, you're going to wait 18 months for an MRI and you can barely get into a school. You can't find a family doctor. You can't afford the rent. And oh God, don't even dream of getting a down payment for a home to buy right now. And this government's in denial. They will not tap the brakes on the immigration levels. Like guys, it's just math. That's all it's down to now is math. We don't have the resources to accommodate the number of people we're bringing in. Why is this so hard? I mean, part of it is the government's falsely shoring up the economy because, yes, immigrants bring in a burst of economic activity when they come in, but it also hits the resources very, very hard. They need resources like everybody else, and we don't have them, and that hurts them and us. And these polls keep coming out. More and more academics are coming out. More and more politicians are coming out. People are saying, Justin Trudeau, please. You know, the banks are coming out. You've got to slow this down. And he just ignores it. He just lets it blast by them. But I mean, when you're a trust fund baby, who knows, you're going to retire on a private island someplace with a giant pension. You're not worried about the economic damage you're actually reaping by trying to shore up this false economy. I guess you can afford to ignore it, but the rest of us are all going to be paying a terrible, terrible price for this. And on it goes. Well, doing what we can, guys. All we can do is keep pointing it out, keep pushing. We got another election coming eventually. We just want to make sure we get it right when we get there. Well, guys, I'm sorry. Yes, I guess I got stood up by 2 guests in one show. That's a new record for me. I've had guests stand me up before, but this is the first time 2-in-1 show, and rest assured, you won't have to worry about me booking them again and wasting your time and mine. But thank you for tuning in and listening to me today, guys. I do appreciate it. We did cover a lot of ground. Be sure to tune into The Pipeline tonight, and next week we'll be on with a fresh new show and a fresh new guest who I'm certain will actually show up for it. So y'all have a good one. We'll see you this time next week.
Canadian Shooting Sports Association. Without the CSSA, our gun rights would have been taken long long ago. These guys are on the front lines helping to draft smart and intelligent firearms regulations and legislation in Canada, and more importantly, educating the public about how we keep guns out of the hands of the wrong people. To become a member, it's absolutely worth every penny.